no helicopters have been procured for me to go to golf course. Thank you.
I've never said he wasn't a great politician. I'm just saying he's a
cop. He's listening, Andrew.
How'd you play out there today?
Well, I found the conditions challenging, mostly because there's no grass on the golf course. But there never has been.
I'm thinking about the swag bag, and I have high hopes for the swag bag.
When you got three crevices on the green, your course is trash.
What is happening, folks? Welcome back to the Beltway Golfer Podcast. I am your host, Alex Dixon. This is episode 91. This past summer in the DMV was rough for golf course maintenance. A combination of extreme heat during the day and lots of rain in the evenings, while not uncommon in the DC area, seemed to happen every single day for about a 6-week stretch in late June and July. And golf courses struggled. Some did better than others. Some really struggled maintaining healthy grass. And the result of that is there was some unhappy golfers in the region, sometimes justified, a lot of times unjustified. It's the weather. You know, this is the region that we golf in. Anyhow, I thought it'd be a good idea to bring on a local golf course superintendent to specifically talk about the challenges that this summer presented for golf course superintendents, talk about the weather, talk about how golfers and golf courses can interact better when it comes to golf courses being impacted by the weather, whether it be car path only or aeration of greens or fairways or temporary tees, the whole nine. My original concept was to bring on a host of superintendents. Life got in the way a little bit. Things got busy. Settled on one, Mr. Rob Randall, who is the head superintendent out at Worthington Manor up just outside Frederick, Maryland. Great golf course, public golf course. They fared, because of some of their natural terrain movement, they fared better than a lot of other courses did. But I thought it'd be a good to have a superintendent on to specifically talk about the challenges that this summer presented and challenges of maintaining grass in summers in the DC region. It's not easy. So I hope there's some value here. We really get into a lot of the basics. I asked some pretty basic questions about, grass types and things you can do to improve drainage, but hopefully it's helpful and, you know, a good conversation and worthwhile to hear from a golf course superintendent at length about what went on this summer. That's about it. So I enjoyed the conversation with Rob, and certainly go out and visit Worthington Manor because they're doing a great job out there. In other news, it's September. This is coming out. We got Ryder Cup next week. Really enjoyed the Walker Cup. I hope you checked out our last podcast episode, which was the Surrender Birdies, where we talked to David Lee, who volunteered out at Cypress Point for the Walker Cup. One other project I loosely announced and haven't firmly announced in social media yet, but I've been conceptualizing it and working on it for quite some time. And it's, you know, things have moved slower than I'd like, but we're getting moving. And that is bringing back a print publication about golf in the Mid-Atlantic with a focus on this region that is the Beltway Golfer. Think Beltway Golfer and a lot of the posts that I do, but kind of in long form with some quality photography and a print version. Golf Monthly and Golf Styles printed in this region for 20, 30 years and was a quality publication. And they went out of print at the beginning of COVID. And I think there's a gap in the marketplace. I say all that to, if you're listening to this and you've got skills and want to see your name or your work in print and are into golf, which I imagine you are if you're listening to this podcast, if you're a writer, if you're a photographer, if you're an editor, if you're a graphic designer, if you're an artist, any of these things, shoot us a note. I'll put out a call for collaborators on Instagram, but let's get the conversation going. Not sure when the first publication is going to be put out yet. Maybe this winter, maybe early spring of 2026, but we're moving forward. So excited to announce that. As of now, it's just going to be called Beltway Golfer. That may change, but we'll see. If you get any questions about it or want to help out? And anyway, if maybe you're a sponsor, if you want to talk sponsorships, maybe you get ideas for stories, shoot us a note. Again, let's get that conversation going. Let's get to the conversation with Mr. Rob Randall, head superintendent at Worthington Manor, and we'll talk growing grass in the DMV. Enjoy episode 91 of the Beltway Golfer Podcast. All right. I'm joined by Mr. Rob Randall, golf course superintendent at Worthington Manor. Rob, how are you?
We're doing good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I got you right in the middle of a work day, so you came in off the course. But, you know, there's a lot to talk about. I've got a million questions. The main motivation of having you on the podcast is, you know, we're sitting here chatting. We're 5 days, technically, I guess, 5 days left in summer. Before the fall kicks in, even though it already feels like fall. Yeah. But the DMV, the Mid-Atlantic, the DC region, we had a tough summer for golf course maintenance. And when you go on to some of these like Facebook groups or even like comment sections on social media, you get a lot of comments about golf course maintenance from people that maybe don't know what they're talking about. So I thought it'd be a good idea to grab a superintendent and kind of talk about the summer in DC and you could talk about some of your experiences at Worthington Manor, one of my favorite public golf courses in the region. But let's start with, how would you describe to anybody what the summer of 2025 was from a golf course maintenance perspective, as it may, related to the weather?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was very difficult. None of the superintendents or the sales guys or consultants that I talked to, nobody has said, oh man, that course over there is perfect. They're not dinged up at all. Everybody's got some scars. Everybody's got some spots. The weather was tough. I don't think it was necessarily abnormal. But what was abnormal was like the intensity and the duration of the heat, the humidity, and the amount of rainfall. That was what was super challenging and probably abnormal, right? And, you know, it's pretty normal to get 95 degrees or a stretch of 4, 5, 6 days of 95 degrees and 75 to 80 degrees at night in the summer here. Like, those are some tough stretches. Generally, you know, superintendents are checking the weather every day and you have that like 10, 12, 15 day forecast up and you look and you're like, okay, we got 4 or 5 tough days here. You rally the troops, you tell your guys, all right, we're in for a little hot stretch here, but like, you know, next Tuesday, we got like a 60 degree night and it's going to cool down. Seemingly like mid-June on for like 6 or 7 straight weeks was really intense heat, really high humidity. Guys, we're getting a lot of rainfall.
That was kind of the combo, right? I mean,
that's what made it so tough.
It's the insane heat during the day, followed by, you know, one of the typical, you know, thunderstorms that we get here. Those kind of hot, humid thunderstorms we get every night in the summer, and it was just happening seemingly every day.
Night. Yeah. Luckily, thank God, we missed a lot. Worthington Manor, this little tiny spot in the corner of Frederick County, is really, really dry. So luckily, most of that heavy rain missed us. You know, we caught a thunderstorm here and there in the summer, but overall, we were actually weirdly dry. But, you know, if it's 95 degrees and then 3 p.m., you get a thunderstorm that rolls through that dumps an inch of rain, you know, that line of storms comes through. And right behind that line of storms is sunshine and more intense heat from 3 p.m. until, you know, it's dark out at 9 o'clock at night. So you got water sitting on the surface of your grass. If your golf course doesn't drain really, really, really well, you know, that grass is just cooking and the roots in the top inch or two are really just cooking. You know how hot that water gets sitting on the ground. So I think that was, luckily, it didn't happen here. I mean, we had a couple little spots here the size of like a golf cart or two, some spots that don't drain super well. But, you know, I heard stories guys have, you know, entire sections of fairways that, you know, were just low-lying areas, didn't drain, and just got absolutely cooked because the heat.
Got it. So it's really, you know, you're already hot on during the day, but that's more about what it's doing to the grass if it was wet from the night before. So it's not necessarily that it's hot and that it's wet. It's the fact that it's wet and then hot because heat of wet kind of boils and kills the grass yourself.
Sure. Yeah. You probably remember like mid, late July June through July, you'd walk outside at 7 in the morning or whatever to go to work and like you have pants on and like a polo or something, and you're like sweating before your AC's on at 7 a.m. in the morning. Like it's hot, it's humid. So even overnight, that grass doesn't cool down, the roots don't cool down, the soil doesn't cool down. And then, you know, by the afternoon, it's 95 degrees again. It's just, the grass can't handle it. This grass cannot handle it.
Yeah. And I mean, the irony, I mean, somebody listening to this now, we've had a beautiful last, you know, few weeks, maybe last month.
Yeah.
And so you almost forget how bad it was in late June and July. So let me ask this, like, so when you're in the middle of that stretch where the conditions, the weather conditions, the heat during the day and the heavy rains, during the evening are kind of worst case for a golf course superintendent, like when you come in the morning with your staff and you're in the middle of that, like what can you do, if anything?
I mean, so it depends on your golf course. If your golf course drains really well, which luckily Worthington does, if you've been out here, right, there are no flat lies out here, like on some tees, and even some of those tees are suspect. But there's no flat lies out here. So everything runs off here, which is great. Goes into a catch basin, drains into the creek or our pond, whatever. So luckily we can do a lot of stuff. We can mow tees, we can mow fairways if we need to, we can manage moisture, get guys on hoses if we need them, get our sprays out. If your golf course doesn't drain well, you know, you can't get machines out there. So that's what I heard a lot of the problems were, the issues were, right? If you have some saturated fairways and it's hot and it's humid, you need to spray those fairways with fungicide so that you don't get crazy disease breakthrough and lose your whole fairway. But a sprayer with 300 gallons of water in it is pretty heavy. And you can't put that out on your turf. That's going to damage your turf. So, I mean, it's really difficult for guys if their course doesn't drain well and they don't have the proper infrastructure and drainage in their fairways to get machines out there, one, to even mow them, and two, to spray them, which is super, super important. I mean, if you wanted to grow mold, right, what environment would you have? It would be hot and humid 24/7.
Sure.
You know, and that's what we had from mid-June all the way pretty much until August 1st.
And when.
Right. And exactly. That's why we keep things in the refrigerator, right? And it's kind of dry and cool in there. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if I answered your question, but I think that you can do some things. And superintendents want to do stuff, right? We're come in every day and we're looking at a golf course. And you know, in the spring and the fall, it's like getting a little bit better every day. You're feeling really good about yourself and your team and everything. You're doing a good job. In the summer, your golf course is generally getting kind of worse and worse and worse slightly. You're holding the rope to make sure it doesn't, you know, completely die. But you always want to do something. And I mean, that's a real challenge, I think, for superintendents. Sometimes the best thing to do is nothing and kind of wait for the weather to turn a little bit and really just baby it. You know, back off the mowing, back off the rolling a little bit. But yeah, it's a big challenge to try to do stuff in those conditions.
When there's water sitting out there, like I imagine a lot of the courses, maybe less so at Worthington Manor because you have so much kind of land movement. But at courses that are flatter and maybe tree lined where that water is just kind of sitting there. If you don't have proper drainage and infrastructure in place to begin with, you know, this may be a naive question, but is there anything you can do kind of like on the fly to help that scenario?
I mean, in the moment, sure, you could maybe squeegee some water off. Sure. That damages turf to some degree as well. The real answer for that is if you don't have drainage, like you got to have a really, really good aerification program. Have you ever seen the videos of guys like aerifying fairways on the tractor?
Yes.
Like they're moving at a walking pace. And, you know, the tractor is an arm's width wide, and that's how wide it aerifies. So to aerify your fairways, it's not like we can just pop out there and aerify all of our fairways in 1 or 2 days. You know, it takes a week.
So, does Worthington Manor, do you have, like, do you aerify fairways at all?
You know what I mean? You got to essentially close your golf course or close an entire hole. So we try to in the winter. Yeah. At the very least, we'll poke like a solid time, like a small solid hole. But we have guys, we're contracting some guys to come out in November with, you know, four or five tractors, four or five sweepers to clean it up. So they'll do that. I mean, that costs a lot of money. But there's a reason, right? Like, Bethesda, Woodmont, Congressional, right? They have aerification week. Like they close for an entire week. They aerify the course wall to wall, you know, do all the fairways. That allows water to go, you know, directly into the soil a little bit better. All your, you know, normal public golf courses that make some money by guests coming through the door, hard for me to ask the owner, hey, can we close for a week?
Yeah, it's
to aerify our fairways. It's a tough ask. It's not really realistic. So it'll test your, you know, your aerification that you do in the fall, in the winter, in the spring. The issues are going to show up in the summer if you haven't been doing that. But it's hard to do. It's not like an easy thing. Superintendents aren't just being lazy by not doing it. It's like there's issues and there's reasons why that it's not super easy to just do.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, the average Joe Blow public golfer complains enough about aerified greens. Mm-hmm. I can imagine how loud they would get if they show up and the entire fairway looks like that, or it's got holes all over it. They'd probably be screaming for their money back.
Yeah, definitely.
what about grass? So like, let's start like what grasses do Worthington Manor, does Worthington Manor use?
So we have bent grass tees and greens. We have POA, mainly POA and bent grass greens. But we're all cool season here. We have Bermuda grass on our driving range tee, and that's about it. We've put some HGT bluegrass out, which is another cool season grass that handles the heat a little bit better. But we're an entirely cool season golf course. Some courses around here, I mean, everybody pretty much knows the Bermuda grass golf courses. They're the ones that get straw colored in the winter. But yeah, we have cool season grass here. We're rocking with it as long as we can.
Got it. Are there certain ones that, you know, back to the specific conditions that we had to deal with this summer, does that mix of Poe and Ben, you know, work better than just Ben? Is Bermuda like in I know there's some challenges, benefits and disadvantages with Bermuda the time of the season, but specifically with this weather, are there certain ones that kind of react better?
I mean, Bermuda grass is right, like a warm season grass, almost like a tropical plant. So, right, what is like a palm tree like? Like it's hot and humid, they grow in Florida and the Caribbean. Bermuda grass is like that. The more hot it is, the more humid it is, loves it, you know, thrives. Bent grass, POA, exact opposite. Once it gets above like 75, 80, 85 degrees, once you're getting that direction, the roots on your grass are literally shrinking. So your roots will grow on cool season grass in the spring. Once it gets above 80 degrees every single day and the soil temperature gets up a little bit, those roots are literally shrinking from, you know, hopefully you got 5, 6, 7 inch roots down to almost nothing. And when it's almost nothing and it's almost dead, then usually it's September and it's cooling down a little bit, then those roots are starting to grow a little bit more. But no, I mean, guys with Bermuda grass, I think they had a great summer that had Bermuda grass fairways. Though, you know, the narrative coming out of the winter, with all, I mean, all these superintendents and sales guys, we all talk about how everybody's doing. But the narrative coming out of the winter this past
Bermuda,
winter,
Bermuda had a tough winter, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was tough. And everybody's saying, man, look, I told you so. This, you can't be putting Bermuda grass here. The winters are too brutal. It's all going to die every winter, blah, blah, blah. And now that conversation feels like 10 years ago because all the guys with cool season grass had such a tough summer and the guys with Bermuda grass are sitting there like, man, we're good. We're hanging out. We're looking great. So, I mean, just to show there's no good type of grass for this region year round, you know?
Interesting. So Bermuda, a perfect calendar year for Bermuda, just for example, would be around here, a tame winter.
Sure.
And then, you know, get as humid and wet as you want and Bermuda will be fine.
Yeah. I mean, no golf course does really well when it's like super wet and like thunderstorms every night. But hot and humid and, you know, two thunderstorms a week, a dump a half an inch, you know, Bermuda grass can handle that fine. But I mean, if you get below, you know, if you get down into the teens and the 20s for an extended period of time in the winter, you know, you're going to lose some Bermuda grass. We have a big tarp that we put on our driving range tee because that thing's exposed and gets hit by the wind and it gets really, really bitter cold up there. So that protects our Bermuda grass really nicely in the winter. But you can't buy 25, 30 acres of tarps to tarp your fairways. That's just not going to happen.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you kind of just alluded to it, but, you know, talking to the sales guys and some of their folks, do superintendents, do you guys have kind of a mechanism or a network to kind of communicate about conditions? Is there some massive text thread, or is it all through the Golf Course Superintendent Association, or how do you guys communicate?
Yeah, I mean, there's meetings and things that people go to and socials and stuff, but I mean, a lot of us just like, we all have AirPods now, so we're riding around in the morning changing cups or prepping greens or whatever, and we'll just call our buddy and shoot the shit and be like, hey, how much rain did you get last night? Is it going to rain tonight? I think we're going to get this thunderstorm. You better get this spray out. And oh shit. And that reminds you, oh my God, I didn't remember to get this other spray out before this rain comes. And I saw this tropical air mat. Yeah. We're all like total grass nerds and we're talking to each other. And I mean, everybody's super helpful. You know, if anybody knows me in the turf industry, it's probably because I've called you and asked you a question. Because I haven't been doing this very long. So, I mean, everybody's super helpful. All the sales guys, everybody. There's no real animosity between anybody. We all pretty much help each other out. Because, I mean, you need to. It's hard. Like, nobody wants to see some guy have a tough summer and, you know, get fired. It's a hard job, especially in the summer. It's a little bit easier now that it's cooled down. But now you're thinking about doing projects and that sort of thing. But yeah, we all talk to each other.
Sure. I imagine it's, golf course maintenance. Again, even when you're just talking about airification, like it's got to be a constant battle between the maintenance crew, the superintendents, and operations, or, you know, if you're in a larger place, maybe you got a marketing person.
Yeah.
And the communication, especially when you've got, again, you go on some of these message boards or social media.
I
want to get you started.
Yeah. No, it's
but
fine.
When you get people that react to whether it's I showed up and nobody told me it was going to be Carpath only, or I showed up and they didn't tell me beforehand that the greens were punched. You know, how do you, you know, what are your thoughts on just in general the communication or lack thereof, or what the industry could do better at that piece?
I think in general, people are the most upset and mad. What I've found is when you're not upfront about things, right?
Right. Sure.
If you're Carpath only, like, it should say it on the pro shop desk when you walk in, right? The guy checking you in or the starter should be telling you, hey, it's Carpath only today. If the golfer asks why, you know, that's a fair question. I think you're paying money. Why is it Carpath only? Well, we got an inch of rain last night. Okay. This is a harder one to explain, but sometimes we go Carpath only because it is so dry here and the grass is like, you know, really hurting that us letting golf carts drive across it when it's 100 degrees is not good for the grass and you'll lose some grass. So that's a harder one to explain why it's Carpath only because it's dry. But yeah, I mean, I think you got to communicate a little bit better. At Worthington here, we don't even have a maintenance facility per se, right? Like you, normal golf course, there's the pro shop, clubhouse, maintenance facility is somewhere out on the golf course, separate entrance, separate office, everything. I'm sitting in the upstairs of our clubhouse now. We have like a two-bay garage down there. We keep some equipment behind the barn. We keep equipment in various sheds. Every superintendent here has been asking for a maintenance facility. We're not going to get one. I'm cool with it, right? I'm cool with it because my relationship with the owner, the two pros, the whole pro shop staff, the food and beverage lady, right? Everything is so good because I see them 3, 4, or 5 times a day. So our communication is really good here.
You're saying your communication might be better because you guys aren't off on the opposite side of the golf course in a maintenance gym, like it is at a lot of golf courses.
Yes, I think so. I mean, and generally, superintendents aren't the most outgoing people, right? They're a little, that's probably what attracted them to the industry. They're like, oh, I get to, you know, hang out. I can talk to the grass. It doesn't talk back, you know, a little more reclusive, right? So they probably, a lot of guys don't want to go drive up to the clubhouse and talk to the pro and explain to the members or whatever why something's going on. And then too, all these people and these guys on these message boards and things, you know, they drive around and they play different golf courses all the time. So they're somewhere once, and then 3 days later, they play another golf course, and they might not go back to that first golf course for 4 months. So they're there like one time. If you're a member at a club, you play there 2 or 3 times a week, you know what's going on. You see that, oh my gosh, the fourth tee is really hurting over there. And then you go back 4 days later, all right, we close that tee, we're going to aerify it, fertilize it a little bit, and you're going to be over on this tee, this temporary tee. And people are generally, they're like, okay, that makes a lot of sense, right? That tee was not doing well. They moved me over here because we're going to get that tee healthy and then we're going to come back, right? If you're somewhere once for a summer, like you played Worthington one time this summer, we're on the temporary tees on 6, you're just mad because you paid $100 and you're hitting off a temporary tee for 1 shot. You know, so it's hard and it's hard to,
I agree.
Communicate that every single day to somebody that's coming to play. You know, I could put a note on everybody's cart every day, but there's something every day, you know?
I think it's a total, I get frustrated even just running Beltway Golfer and getting messages like I'll post a, you know, some pictures or a video of a golf course around, and then somebody will send me a picture, you know, a note a few days later, like, and it's, How are the conditions? So all they want to know is about the conditions. And one of the things that drives me crazy, it's similar to just what you just said is, you know, conditions can vary so much. Even in the same month on any golf course, like I happen to go out the day after a big rainstorm? Was it hot the day before? And if you're going if you go out in the 5th of the month and the 20th of the month, two people could have totally different experiences based on what you see the conditions are. So I tend to just not talk about it at all.
Yeah. I mean, and I get people, right. They're spending their hard earned money and it's expensive to play golf now. You know, I think we're over $100 on Saturday morning. It's 120 or something like that. Way cheaper to walk. So everybody should walk. But yeah, I mean, you're spending your hard earned money and you want to know where the best place to go play golf is. I get it. But it's challenging. You know, it's not an easy job. And I really think that, I mean, if golfers could, you know, temper their expectations in the heat of the summer, right? In like June, July, August, this August was great. But, you know, June, July, August, I wouldn't be coming out expecting the greens at any golf course to be rolling 12 and super firm and super fat. Like, right, if they're rolling 8, 9, 10 and there's grass on the greens, you should probably be pretty happy in this area. And your best golf is going to be in the fall and the spring, right? Like, that's when you should expect things to be really nice and really good. And we got to kind of baby the grass a little bit, keep it alive. So in the fall, we can have great conditions.
I do think back to your point about, you know, it's like anything in life, not just golf course conditions, but people appreciate when you're upfront about things. And I think there's a lesson, you know, so just some golf courses got beat up this summer, not just on the golf course, but online as well. One famously did in Northern Virginia that kind of went viral. Yeah. That was in rough shape.
Sure.
I think there's an opportunity, especially in this world of social media, where instead of golf course operators posting about, you know, the ham and cheese special all the time, it's like, get the marketing person, the operation person, take a card out and interview the superintendent for 10 seconds about, you know, why you are car path only or something like that, and then communicate that. And you could spin it in a way that says, you know, this is why we're doing it for the long-term health of blah, blah, blah. Just being upfront about things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll post things on my story mainly because they're cool, fun pictures or whatever. It's mostly good stuff, but sometimes we get smoked in a spot or we get bad summer patch and I take a picture of it and people are like, holy shit, like, what is that? I'm like, it's this crazy disease. They're like, why would you put that? I'm like, man, this is what happens. So grass around here sometimes, no one's perfect, you know?
Yeah.
Guys are getting sod trucks and sodding their rough and things. And like, I don't care how much money you got. Like, some guys got banged up this summer and it's just the way it is.
Sure. I mean, the golf course superintendents, there's just more and more of you guys that are on social media and kind of posting stuff and videos while you're out each morning. There's another guy that I'm friends with who was one of the first superintendents. I think he was the first superintendent on this podcast, Ben Ellis, who's out at Andrews Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And he's a great follow because he'll put, you know, he's out there at 4 a.m. and, you know, this is any superintendent, but I think it's extra challenging at a military base. But, you know, dealing with some, you know, old pipe that's, you know, exploded or cracked in the middle of the night. So yeah. for an average golfer watching, you know,
dude, it's always something.
Following the superintendents, I think will give you a better idea of, you know, what's really going on the course.
Yeah. I mean, you can throw if you're a superintendent, you just throw your expectations for how any day is going to go just right out the window. Cause I mean, you can have a plan in place, you know, every day I have an Excel sheet with everything that we're going to do. Generally it goes pretty good, but something breaks every day, you know? Sure.
What about like switching gears a little bit? Like what about the, you know, going back to when we were talking about different types of grasses and like, for instance, how Bermuda had a rough winter, but actually did fare pretty well in the summer and how that's, you know, might be the opposite for bent. Are the, you know, cause those extreme swings in weather, you know, it's not getting better.
No.
So how does the, I mean, I'm sure you're a million times more, more in tune to the turf grass industry than I'll ever be. You know, I imagine the industry is trying to create new strains and new varietals and mixes try to combat that. You know, have you looked at any of that stuff?
Yeah, they're coming out with new grasses all the time, whether it's Bermuda or bent grass, things that are more heat tolerant, things that are more tolerant to traffic. But there is no, I mean, so my first season was 2022 as a superintendent here. It was tough. I don't know, it's 2023, I guess. It was tough. At the end of that season, I'm like, good job, everybody. Talking to other guys, they're like, man, this is like one of the hardest years we've ever had. I was like, nice. Like, I think we did pretty well. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. Last year, bad drought. Same thing happened. People said the same thing. They're like, no, we said last year it was really tough. No, this summer was super tough. Like this was the summer. And then this year, the same thing. So I'm 3 years in and it's just like, I think every summer is going to be the hardest summer we've ever had. Like, I think that's how it's going. Which is fine.
So are you here?
We'll keep our jobs.
But based on that, based on that trend, it means next year is going to be even worse. So if next year is even going to be worse and now, yeah, again, maybe Worthington Manor's, you know, got better infrastructure and natural drainage than a lot, but are you hearing, you know, do you think golf
There's
courses
no
are
magic
getting
grass?
Right. But I mean, but as far as like, right. They're not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would, you know, I mean, I guess I was getting at more like, you know, I'm hoping golf course, you know, there's no easy solution, but trying to get it, you know, get ahead of it from adding new infrastructure and drainage and.
Yeah. No, definitely. Like, that's the biggest thing. I mean, so there are better strains of grass every single year, no doubt about it, right? I worked at Bethesda for a bit. We were just working on every winter. I was only there for one winter, but, you know, sodding out to HGT bluegrass. Break grass for around your tees, around your greens. It's a rough height. You can mow it all the way down to 1/2 inch. We have a par 3 tee out here with it, right? Doesn't get summer patch, this terrible disease. You don't really need a lot of fungicides on it. It's awesome. Great grass. Goes pretty dormant in the winter. So it's not great in the winter and the shoulder seasons as much, but that's the new grass. But, you know, to wholesale change your golf course to a totally different strand of grass, generally private clubs can do it because, right, hey, we're going to close. We're still going to collect some money from our members every month. We're going to be closed for this amount of time. We're going to resod these fairways and then we'll get back to it. And that course will be better. Totally different story for a course that's open year round, getting a lot of winter play. So it's harder, but you know, it makes those winter projects that you see like going on in the winter it just shows you how important they are in the summer. You know, I have no time for complaints about, like, we'll put some people on some temporary tees, on some mats, on par threes in the winter. And some guys have flagged me down and tried to, like, stop me and say, hey, why? I paid $60. Like, why am I hitting off a mat? And I just hit, put the gas pedal, just drive away from them. Because, it's February and it's 41 degrees and you're playing out here and you want to take a divot off this undersized par 3 tee. And, you know, that divot that you take in November and December is going to be there till May. Like, the grass doesn't heal in. So I think the winter work is super important. The guy's doing some infrastructure work or putting some irrigation in or whatever you got to do. That stuff's super important. I mean, that's probably the solution to a tough summer, is having the correct infrastructure. And it's, you don't see it, right? The drainage is literally under the ground. A new irrigation system is literally under the ground, and it costs a lot of money. So it's not fun and exciting for, you know, an owner to pay for or a membership to shell out some money for. But that stuff is what makes a big difference in the summer.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's challenging, certainly in this region. You know, I'm passionate about it, obviously, because, you know, I love DC area golf. That's why I run Beltway Golfer, and 99% of my golf is in this region. And it just seems like conditions are getting harder and harder. Like you said, with the weather patterns around DC are rough. The summers are bad. The winters are getting longer and longer. And so our golf windows seem to be getting shorter and shorter. Sure. Golf's getting more popular, and most of the golf courses around here aren't blessed with some of the elevation change and some of the rolling terrain that Worthington Manor is. We got a lot of flat golf courses. So,
The difference is the weather in the last,
sure,
you know, 5-10 years. They say that, right, like growing grass in DC now is what it was like in Richmond, Virginia, like 10 years ago.
Really?
And growing, like, the climate, right?
Right.
And then growing grass in, you know, Philadelphia is what it was like in Baltimore 10, 15 years ago. Like, that's how it's, and you go down to Richmond and how many golf courses are Bermuda down there? I mean, most of them.
And that,
right?
And that, yeah, right. To your point, that's why you're seeing this kind of slow trend of golf courses kind of moving to Bermuda around here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'll let you off the hot seat and we can talk about a couple more kind of general things that are going on at Worthington Manor. So I did make it out. I'm just kind of curious. Here's a question for you. So I made it out and walked around for, you guys said, US Open qualifying again this earlier this summer. Which was kind of a wet day.
Terrible. I caddied.
Did you caddy?
Yeah, I caddied.
That was kind of a nasty day. I mean, it wasn't brutal, but it was wet.
It was fun.
Yeah. So I was just kind of curious. And you guys are, you know, you Worthington Manor hosts its fair share of events and bigger events. I mean, I don't know how many times you guys have hosted the local qualifying, but it's a bunch, and you host a lot of Maryland State Golf Association events. As far as the superintendent, the maintenance team, like, how does the lead up to, you know, a big event like that differ from, you know, day-to-day public play? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, we really try to be as good as we can be every single day. You know, I tell my guys, I talk to my assistants, it's like, hey, somebody could be coming in from out of town, and this is the one time they play Worthington, right? They're from Philly, their buddy's from Virginia, they meet here to play once a year, you know? So we got to be really good every day. But we definitely try to peak for those events. Like, next Wednesday, we have the USGA four ball qualifier. So we're probably rolling greens every day from now until next Wednesday. So if people come out this weekend, they'll be quick. Good luck. So we kind of just ramp up our maintenance a bit, right? Get a couple more mows on everything, make sure our sprays are all out. And then generally we'll come in Tuesday night, the night before, do kind of like an evening prep. And then the morning we got a full crew and, you know, we make it as perfect as we can. But, you know, we're always close. You know, we always try to keep the greens 10, 10 and a half. They don't really need to be that much faster out here because of the slopes on them. But adding 3, 4, 5 more rolls on the greens, an extra cut if we need it, is generally what we need to do 4 or 5 days leading up to the tournament. You know, greens are usually excellent and guys like it. So hopefully it doesn't, I mean, we looked really, really nice the day or two before that US Open qualifier. I'm glad guys got to come out and play a practice round, because I mean, that was the best we looked in like 5 years. and then it just poured all day, well, the next day. But it was fun. I mean, it's really fun, like getting up for those events. And it's kind of, you know, it's different than having a 4 or 5 day long event with like a practice round and then 4 rounds. That's a different beast. I mean, we've never done that here, but you know, peaking for one day, it's definitely easy. Like it's not easy, but it's attainable. You could definitely do it, you know?
Sure.
Let the greens dry out like crazy and you can just water them like crazy that night after the event. The guys that have, you know, 4 or 5 day events, and then they really, really peak on like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and those greens are cooking on Sunday and really good. Those guys are really, really talented. No. Yeah.
I did see there's not, I forgot. Yeah. That you just mentioned the 4 ball qualifiers coming up there. I did see mm-hmm. there's a local new kind of event that, our guy Don over at, Walk and Play and Tyson mm-hmm. Tyson's West is promoting, is the battle. I forgot what it's called.
Battle of the Barn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a fun good event. Night. That's more like a casual competitive.
Yeah. That's like a money game. Don is always, he's always like, man, there used to be, and I mean, I haven't been around here very long. So he's like, there used to be this and that, and like a good money game in the fall when conditions were awesome, and it's gone now. I mean, I think it's just because everybody's got their private club events and, you know, there's no real thing that everybody can enter. So yeah, it's a 2-man scramble, October, I gotta get the date right. October 14th, 11 a.m. shotgun, 2-man scramble. I think it's $2,000 to the winner. So it's a good money game. And I'm going to, hopefully it doesn't rain, you know, for the 3 weeks leading up and I can make this place concrete. That's my goal.
Here's one. So a while ago I posted, for a little while, I should bring it back up again, but I was doing these videos where I just do a bunch of drone footage of a single hole. Or it's mm-hmm. a video of a single hole, and then I'd ask people like, "What do you think about this hole? Do you love it or hate it?" And they're usually some more unusual holes or challenging holes. And I did it this is like a year ago. I did it for number 3 at Worthington.
Probably did 3. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, and people, and for the most part, people love the hole. They just kind of lamented how hard it is. It's a hard hole. And so my question for you is, as the superintendent, like that hole specifically, where it's a longish par 4, but it's just the where the green is up to the left, and it's just it's hard to hit that green in 2.
Sure,
but short left is I don't know how you describe it, but there's kind of like a
native area that stays a little bit wet.
So how as the superintendent, how much say or license mm-hmm. do you have and what that area looks like, just for example? Is that 100% you're saying?
I'm super unique here that essentially, yeah. You know, the owner lets me kind of do what I want. My first year or two, I was asking him, you know, every time I wanted to like change a grass line or, you know, change the style of a bunker or cut something down or grow something up, I would ask him, and eventually he was like just looking at me, and I could tell by the look on his face, he's like, dude, like, yeah, I trust you, like, go for it. And I'm like, this is great. So, you know, I love architecture. I love that stuff. And it's fun. Like you can kind of play architect out here. It's a little bit easier to do when you're altering a hole that already exists and you've played it a million times than it would be to like create something on a blank canvas. So 3 specifically, 3 had a really big, wide, I think when they were building the place, they thought it was like too swampy or something in there to like just have the rough run right up to the green. But there was a big, it was probably 10 or 12 paces wide, that big tall grass native area hazard in front of the green. So one of the first things I did when I took over here, I made that as narrow as possible. So it's only 2 or 3 feet wide now. So people lose way less balls there, which is great. They're always going to look for their ball, right? You hit it in there, like you're going to look because you're going to try to get up and down for par or bogey or whatever. So we made that as narrow as possible. I put a little bit more short grass around the greens, mowed it a little bit tighter. So sometimes some balls can make it down off that back edge back onto the green. I've thought about taking our mini excavator out there and kind of like digging that trench out and making that thing super narrow, like a foot wide. Maybe throwing some gravel in there, maybe dressing it up. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I'm actively trying to make the golf course easier for everybody. You know, I don't think I can make it easier for the low handicap guy, right? If the greens are firm and the greens are quick and the golf course is firm, like that's our defense there. So I'm not going to make it easier for the low handicap guy, but I want you to be able to hit your ball 100 times, find it and hit it and keep going.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm super lucky.
I'm sure that's a big one that also translates to the operations side is making golf balls findable makes pace of play go quicker and means more tee times on the tee sheet and less people complaining about time.
Yeah, so John Lesage and Justin Keith, our pros here, they do such a great job with pace of play. Now, sometimes we get some outside groups and things that, you know, there's 10 or 12 of them or 16 of them and they generally slow some things down. But, you know, John and Justin are really, really on top of pace of play because that's the number one complaint you're going to get from a public golf course is, hey, this was a 6-hour round. I don't want to come here anymore because the rounds are 6 hours long. So yeah, we worked together and I called John. And I said, hey, what do you think about me mowing that down? The right side of two, like really bad golfers would just slice the ball on two way over towards like five tees and there's like tall grass over there, right? You've already hit a terrible shot. You don't need to lose your ball. Right. Then right. You're on the second hole, you've lost two balls and you're just pissed and you have a bad day.
Yeah. So that's the trick. I imagine both with architecture, but also with like day-to-day maintenance is how do you not just penalize the guy that's already really struggling?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I started playing golf when I got to college and I was terrible. You know, I was a 25 handicap. I was awful. And then, you know, that was 10 years ago now. And now I'm a decent player and play from the back. Right. And like, I can see it. I'm like, man, I struggled with Adam I was the assistant for Adam, the old superintendent here. Our 15th hole was a par three. And there was tall grass, you know, 20 yards in front of the ladies tee, right? The guy playing the tips, he's never going to hit that ball in the tall grass. Like he's never going to top it and lose his ball in the tall grass. Who loses their ball in the tall grass? The little old lady playing. So what do? We cut that grass down, right? She can top it all the way to the green, find her ball, keep going. You know, makes no difference for the guy playing from the back, but the worse the golfer, they can keep going.
Sure.
So that's the mentality there.
Right. No, I like that. It makes a lot of sense. All right. Here's another question for you. So a couple years ago, I was out there playing with my brother-in-law who had only been playing. I think he'd been playing golf for less than a year. Anyway, he hit one on number eight, just past the pin. It rolls back and goes in the hole. Still a little bit salty because I've been playing for, you know, 30 plus years and don't have a hole in one. And I subconsciously maybe hit my golf bag the next hole and ended up breaking my driver on number 11. But my question for you is, that's a really cool hole, especially where the pin placement also oftentimes is on eight, where you can hit that. There's kind of like almost like it goes back to front slope and can come down and gives you the opportunity for an ace on number eight. My question for you is, when it comes to cup placement, you know, is that in, especially on par threes, is that in your head? Do you guys just have like, take number eight, for example, three absolute set cups and the opportunity for holes in one, is that in your mind at all when you're choosing those cups?
Yeah. I mean, okay. So the number one reason we move the pin on, right? You want a different variety of play, right? Also traffic, people's foot traffic. So we have a chart for every green. It has 9 pin positions. Today we're pin number 4, whatever we are, I'm not sure. So our guy goes to the green, he opens up the book. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and they're all rotated around in different sections. One of the superintendents before me, I don't know who did it, but they made an awesome little map of every green. So we move them, we rotate them every day for traffic reasons, right? You can't have them in the same spot, it'll get all worn out. But yeah, I take, it's hard to cut cups out here because the greens are not flat. You know, you can't have any dummy just go out there and put it wherever or else you're going to be putting the ball. It's going to be coming back to your feet. So I take guys out, try to take them out 2 or 3 times, send them with a golf ball. I'm like, take a putter. I don't care. But when you get on every green and you see, all right, pin number 2 is that front section of number 8. So when you get out of your cart, go toss 4 balls, right? Up the slope and then let the ball come back down and dude, putt it right where that ball is. As long as there's no ball marks around it or any crazy cleat marks or anything, dude, cut it. Like, we can make the pins as easy as possible here because they're never easy, right? If you're off the green in the wrong section and you're above the hole, you're screwed. So yeah, I'm like, have some fun. Put some good pins out there. Put some easy ones. Have an ace. I think we had an ace on 8 and 6, like 10 minutes later. Don made an ace on 6, like 5 minutes after a guy made an ace on number 8 a couple weeks ago. So that was cool.
I saw him post that. Well, that's good to hear. I don't know if that makes me feel better or worse for not having one, that you're trying to make it easy, but I like the answer.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, listen, I know you got to get back to work and back out on the course. I know, like you said, you've got some big events coming. I really appreciate you taking some time to join the podcast and talk about, the challenges that this summer faced. And hopefully, I think at the end of the day, and I think there's an education component that golf courses could do a better job of, but it's also on the golfer. Golfers can't just go on message boards bitching about stuff that they don't know or just complaining,
sure,
without doing the research on why things are the way they are, especially when this summer was brutal. I mean, yeah. Just from anybody looking, it was brutal.
Yeah. I mean, one more thing I'd say, like, if the number one thing a golfer can do to help out maintenance, right, is walk, like put your bag on your shoulder and walk. I can't tell you how much more we have to water and fertilize because of golf carts. And I think I talked to my pro about this the other day. Also, people are so against joining up in a cart, right? I see carts all the time, groups, and there's three golf carts, and they're like, man, yeah, I don't want to hop in the cart with this guy. Like, who cares? Like, maybe you'll meet someone you like. If you don't like him and he's a weirdo, you'll have a good story, Like, it's fine. Like, let's join up. I don't see people doing that anymore. I mean, when I first started playing golf, I would join up with whoever was on the tee, and you just go and you play and you meet people.
Yeah. There's certainly plenty of golf courses where they just flat out don't allow that. Where
I would love that.
And I mean, there's more than two carts in a group.
There's a reason for it, because you have all the cart traffic. And if you add another cart to every group, it's like you're adding another round of traffic on the golf course, because the golf cart does do so much damage, especially when it's hot and humid in the summer.
Yeah. That's interesting.
So yeah, people should walk as much as they can. We love our walkers.
We'll put that on a t-shirt.
Love it.
Sounds good. All right, Rob, this has been great. I really appreciate it. And good luck with the rest of the season. But thanks for coming on.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much.